Welcome to Overtures. We recorded this episode at the very end of July, right as my guest was in the middle of so many projects, all of which went very successfully. This was such a fun episode getting to know a guest I had only acted over Zoom with previously. All links are in the show notes. Take your seats, we'll be starting shortly. Hello, everyone. I hope everyone's doing well, having a great Saturday morning. It's nice to be up and about, and albeit being very warm here in New York City, it's nice to be up. But yeah, I hope everyone's doing well. Just some personal news. So my partner and I adopted some cats this week. They're both very young. It's a mama and a baby, Masa and Tamale. And I'm mostly wanting to let you all know, just because, of course, I haven't gone live yet with them in the apartment before, so I truly don't know how they'll react. So I apologize for any kitty interruptions, be it meows or otherwise. And of course, as soon as I start talking, Tamale comes right up and starts saying hello. But yeah, so we'll go ahead and get started with today. So welcome to episode 39. I'm going to start with a clip today.
Could a night so frozen be so scalding hot? Morning, this smile be so wrong. Why are tired years strewn on the cutting room floor of memory? When single frames from one magic night forever flicker in close up on the 3D IMAX of my mind. That's poetic. Why did Mimi knock on Roger's door? Collins choose that phone booth back where Angel set up his drums? Why did Maureen's equipment break down? Why am I the witness? And when I capture it on film, will it mean that it's the end and I'm alone?
Awesome. So my guest today is a local theater educator and artist on the main line in Pennsylvania who splits his time between being a Montessori teacher during the day and director and actor in the evenings. He is the head of theater for Upper Darby High School and Marion Mercy Academy. While my guest and I do share a graduate school alma mater, we've only met over Zoom and we've honestly talked more in character than as ourselves. So this should be really fun. Without further ado, this is Chris Monaco. Hi.
Hi.
How you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I do not have cats over here, so.
Sounds good. Sounds good. So if we hear meows, it will only be on my end. It'll only be just me.
Yeah.
But yeah, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. It's wild to watch that clip again. That was a year ago.
Oh, wow.
My hair was so much cooler back then.
And I can imagine Rent is also just such a wonderful and fun experience to work on and very meaningful as well.
Yeah, truly. The whole cast of that, we've got a group chat that is still going strong because we grew so close doing that show. And I feel like it's part and parcel of the show though, you know, it's like,
yeah.
It really encourages that sense of camaraderie and community and,
Absolutely. I feel like there's a few shows out there. I mean, probably several, but like there's a few shows that are like definitely foster that kind of like family sense. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Rent is definitely one of those where there's people that I know who have worked on Rent who's like, oh yeah, those people are still in my life. I still do like all these things with them. And I think that's really special that a show can like bring together people outside of being on stage mm-hmm. for such a long time. But as I was saying before, we share an alma mater. So we both went to Villanova University for our master's degrees in theater. Yep. I graduated in 2021 and was a full-time student. But when did you graduate?
I graduated in 2017.
Gotcha. And were you a full-time or part-time student?
Full-time. So it was just 2 years in and out.
Just the 2 years. Yeah. No, it's so quick and such a quick turnaround. It's crazy to me. And while we never intersected class-wise, we did get to work together on a workshop the theater department got to work for a semester with playwright Hannah Khalil virtually, being the spring 2021 Heimbold Chair of Villanova Irish Studies. We produced her play Scar Test as part of the season, and then she co-taught my playwriting class, was probably in a few other classrooms as well. But we got to have the opportunity to spend a weekend workshopping a play that she was writing, The Galtee. And that was such a fun experience.
Yeah, it really was. I got to watch the Scar Test. So I got like that little preview of her work and you know, how it can work in production, even though it was kind of a film and kind of, you know.
Right.
But it was also really cool to be a part of the development of new work.
Yeah.
You know, like just to get to watch what that process is like, to get to see how much can be changed across the course of such a short time period, that she'd come in with whole new scenes written just based reactively off what we were doing in rehearsal.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I remember, like, it's like we came in one day and these were the scenes. We were constantly changing the order of the scenes because she doesn't necessarily write that play in a chronological order. So she's like, I want to see what order works best. And we were constantly changing characters and things like that. But like you were saying, bringing in whole new scenes the next day and being like, yeah, you would ask, like some of you had asked this question and it made me think, so I have this whole brand new scene. And I had personally never experienced that, getting to work on something that was still so early on in the process. So that was so cool. And I'm sure it was also really cool for you because you're being an alum of the program. Like, Villanova opens it up to current and former students. So you had the opportunity to come back and get to work on it.
Yeah. Well, I got to, so the way I got into Villanova was, I had a friend who was in the program, you know, years before I even contemplated, I was still in undergrad. I was at Temple.
Yeah.
And they were doing Carousel, and he said, hey, we're always looking. And I was like, that's such a foreign concept to me. Like, it's for the students who were there, right? And they're like, well, for the musicals, sometimes we need some outside people, you know, you should come try out. And so I did, and I got cast. So I got to work with Valerie.
Oh, wow.
And this is back in 2012. And
that's so funny.
I really loved it. I loved the community. And I came back. I auditioned for a few things again while I was still just like an active student at Temple. So I got to do stuff at Villanova before going there. And I only wanted
to
go there because of having gotten to do all the stuff. I didn't even think about doing grad school.
Right.
But then I was in the midst of doing a play there. I was coming up at the end of my time at Temple. And Harriet Power, who was the chair at the time, was like, hey, have you considered a grad degree? And I was like, why not?
So, it's like, I've already done shows here. Why not? Why don't I just spend 2 years just hanging out with everyone there? I didn't realize that you had done some shows with Villanova before going there. That's such a cool and wonderful opportunity. And also to then like being like, oh, I'm in the program now. Must have been like so fun and so special in that way.
Yeah.
So getting kind of to the core and the heart of what this show and this interview is. So the beginning is, how did you first get started in theater?
So I grew up with a mother who just loves theater. As far as I remember, I might be misremembering, but I think she only ever did stage crew in high school, but she like just from a very early age, she loved it, and would go to, she like, apparently in her youth, she would like stage door shows at, in New York all the time. And so I was weaned on, like cast albums, you know, in the car, we exclusively listened to either like Disney or show tunes. I believe that the first show I ever saw was The Fantastics, but I was too young to remember. So I take her word for it. So I was raised to love it. And she would take me to see shows all the time. And my older brother did his high school shows and I would go to see them. First show I was ever in was, you know, like the standard elementary school shows that you do in the gym and stuff like that. My first play, I think it was, we called it Of Mice and Mozart. And it was just a little, you know, it's all like public domain music that you rewrite the lyrics to and stuff like that. But, so those are my early beginnings. I think that I first really like kind of locked into saying like, this is what I want to do when I had just hit 13. And I like sampled everything as a kid. Like I did karate for a little bit. I tried soccer. I did baseball. Same.
Specifically taekwondo and soccer for me. So that's very funny.
Yeah. And I swam, and swimming, you know, you could do it over the year, but of course you do it over the summer as well. And I started doing summer theater at Upper Darby Summer Stage. And it really became a sort of you have to choose one or the other. Like, you don't have time to do both. And theater won out because I was really enjoying it. So yeah. I kind of exclusively became the theater kid in high school. And I don't think I ever looked back.
That's awesome. I love that. So then I'm curious, what was like your overture or light bulb moment of like, oh, like I'm going to pursue this as a career. Like I'm going to do this as opposed to like, maybe like, oh, like I have to choose between the two. Like, how do I choose, you know?
Well, I had, as much as my mother loved theater, she was really pressing for me to get like an English degree or an education degree in college. So the consideration of what to do after high school was kind of like present in the mind. I don't know if I could narrow down a sort of like a, like, this is what I want to do, because like I said, like, I think I just always wanted to do theater.
Yeah.
I think what I could say is the light bulb moment of like, I really think that I could make a career out of this. Was the first time that I got to work with a dear friend and mentor of mine, Marcus Stevens, who is a playwright, who's an actor and a director who's currently working in New York. And I think that was a thing. I was so inspired by him, having seen shows that he had directed, having seen him act on stage, and then getting to work with him and understanding he is also a playwright. He juggles all of this, and this is what he does. Like, this is his lifeblood. Because I also had interests as at the time, not really as a director, but also as a writer. I liked acting, but I also liked doing other elements in theater as well. And so seeing him do it and having him say like, you can be more than one thing and you can do it well and you can make it, kind of made me go, okay, well, I guess I should try it.
Yeah, no. And I think that's so special because I think so often if students are like at a young age realizing, oh, I want to pursue theater, like they think maybe like, oh, well, if I want to be an actor, I can only be an actor. Or if I want to write, I can only do that. And I think it's so important to introduce from like an early age, like, hey, you can do as many of the hats as you want. Like you can take as many as you want. And that it's so fun to hear that, because like knowing the Villanova like program and things like that, it so much fosters that. And so I'm sure that also must have really helped in being like, oh yeah, I could do the Villanova program, just because you're interested in not just acting, but also writing, and you've gotten into directing as well.
Right. Well, and I went to, when I went to Temple now has a booming, you know, they have their MFA, their BFA.
Right.
When I was there, the musical theater program was very fledgling. I was part of the first like full class of people to be inducted into the program. It had been started the year before, but it had like six people in it, you know. And it was just a BA at the time. And, you know, the thing that they kept emphasizing over and over again was like, a BA, I know that a lot of people really want to be getting their BFA, but what's cool about a BA is that you are still getting that sampling of like the variety of things that you possibly can do.
Yeah.
You know, a BA is like, it's like the sample platter, you know, which I do like getting the BA and then getting the MA at Villanova. It always kept at the back of my mind, like, don't focus on just the one thing, try it all.
It's so important, and I wish that concept perhaps had been introduced to me like at an earlier age, but I'm so glad that like I did also a BA and an MA and got to experience like, oh, I can do all the things and enjoy that and make a career out of that as well. And of course, we're just talking about like doing all the things, but now I'm like, okay, but now I want to talk about the specific things that you do. So as an actor, obviously you're musical theater trained, and you really enjoy musical theater. Do you any, lean towards any particular style or genre as an actor? Like, I know you like musical theater, but are there other styles and genres that really excite you?
Well, I when I was looking at what I wanted to do in college, I was kind of adamant that I really wanted to get just a theater degree. Mm-hmm. Because I thought of myself as more of like, you're a straight plays kind of guy.
Oh, really?
I don't consider myself a dancer. Maybe a mover, mm-hmm. but it certainly dance did not come easy to me. And so for me, I was like, if I wanted to make it in musical theater, you know, it'd be so difficult with, you know, just the way that cattle calls work and stuff like
Absolutely.
That. Like I'd be out, you know, from the minute they try to get me to dance. and I loved musicals. They were my lifeblood, but I was like, you know, I don't think I've got what it takes. But Temple's program, they did have a theater program, but you didn't audition into it again at the time you do now.
Right.
I wanted to audition in. I wanted someone to say like, you know, like, no, yeah. like we accepted you.
Yeah.
So by default, I auditioned for the musical theater program and then I got in and I was lucky enough to get in. So I love doing musicals. I've been doing more musicals and plays. If I were to have to like narrow it down to a specific genre, I like it all. I think that there is something exciting to me and that makes me feel a little more like I'm really excelling right now in doing comedies. And I also, I tend to play character roles more often than sort of, I guess, like, I don't know if ingenue is the other term, but
I guess
roles that are very different from me,
right?
Be my comfort zone. Putting on some sort of a funny voice or a, I don't know, a wig or something that makes me look different. That's when I feel like now I'm acting, you know?
Right. Right. No, I can totally understand that. Cause you feel like, oh, I'm doing something now. Cause it's something right. like so far removed from yourself, which is then funny because then we watched that clip of you playing Rent and playing Mark in Rent. And that's not a character, like not a like quote unquote character role at all. Mm-hmm. I think that's very interesting.
Well, cause it took me a lot of time in my early development to come to peace with that.
Yeah.
Because seriously, like I spent all of high school playing like dads and characters. Mm-hmm. And so I hit college and suddenly I did have to start on occasion playing essentially myself, but a little heightened.
Right.
And I felt really insecure about it.
Mm.
I was like, I'm doing something wrong, right? Like I'm not doing anything, you know, like it was actually like I got so cerebral about it because playing closer to myself felt very strange.
That absolutely makes sense. Cause you sometimes as an actor, you feel like, oh, I have to be like doing something. Mm-hmm. And so when it's closer to yourself and more realistic, that can be really hard. And so, yeah, no, that absolutely makes sense. And I do relate to that on some level too, because I'm like, am I doing enough? What's happening?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that absolutely makes sense. Do you have any favorite roles that you've played?
So many. most recently, I've been saying I had the honor of getting to do Big Fish, the musical, twice. Both times I got to play Edward.
Mm.
And I had seen it on Broadway. I had never seen the film. I'd never read the book. So I was going in blind and I had loved it. And getting to see what Norbert Leo Butz did with it was just like astounding to me. I admired him so much as an actor. And I again, usually playing character roles, I had not often played someone who like the whole thing is centered on,
yeah.
you know, Edward is a character role, you know, so I yeah. wouldn't even say like, you know, so it wasn't that, it was just like, I wasn't used to having someone say like, okay, this whole thing is about you.
Right.
So I went in not auditioning for Edward. I had auditioned for his son and, you know, so the first time I did it and I got cast, I was just like, I felt so overwhelmed. I didn't mm-hmm. think I could do it. I didn't think I had it in me. But I enjoyed it so much ultimately. And then, 2 months later, I was auditioning for it again. and I got to do the role again. And, I don't know. It's such a, that show is so beautiful, and the role is such a whirlwind. But in a way, what was nice about it was that I was on stage so much, I was never able to sort of check myself. I had to just do it.
Yeah.
I had to just go on my gut.
A marathon in that way.
Yeah.
You're like, you don't get a chance to like, oh, I'm Chris now. You're in the role the whole time.
Right. So both times were just like an utter joy. And I look back upon both experiences very fondly.
Well, and that's so cool that you got to do the two productions of it in such quick succession as well. Like only 2 months apart. It's like, wow, that's so crazy, but also so serendipitous in a way to be able to do them so close together.
Yeah.
And I also have a clip from Little Women to get another taste of what you've performed. So we're going to watch that real quick.
We can box if you like.
You box.
Ready?
I should warn you, I won a medal for boxing at school. So much we can share. We'll circle the world, doing all we've ever dreamed of. And we'll live in our own way. And I'll see you every day. We'll be the best of friends. When you take a chance on me.
That's such a fun clip. Such a fun clip.
And
Little Women is such a fun show. Like when I found out that Villanova had done Little Women, like not crazy long ago, I was like, I really want to do Little Women. That's such a fun show. And correct me if I'm wrong. That scene is with Laura, right?
Yeah.
Your wife?
That's my wife. Yeah.
That's so exciting. And you two met at Villanova, right?
We met, we get in a dispute over when precisely we met, because she says it's auditions, I say callbacks. So clearly I'm so tunnel mind, it probably was auditions and I didn't remember. But we met in the very, very early days auditioning for our first show there together, which was Eurydice were the auditions. And we had absolutely no expectations of meeting anyone, let alone the one.
Yeah.
And it sort of happened. We fell into a very easy rapport, and like a month later we were dating and we went through the whole program together. We got to play opposite each other thrice in our time at Villanova.
Oh, have fun.
The first time was the original, the Michael Hollinger musical, A Wonderful Noise.
Right.
And it was so funny because that was the third production of the season. So we were publicly known to be together for 5 months probably at that point.
Right.
But the director in rehearsal one day apparently leaned over to someone and said, like, I think there's something happening with Chris and Laura. Did not know, had no clue. She had cast us opposite each other.
Right.
No.
That's so funny.
So yeah, we got to go through the whole thing together.
That's so special. And also to like have that clip, and like, that's a really good quality clip from Little Women. To be able to have that and point to that is so special and so much fun. Do you have any roles that you'd really like to play, or some shows that you really like to do that you haven't done yet?
I would say, so I've gone from like saying the dream roles to like the roles I want to play before I age out of them. I'm at that point now. So Mark was one of them. To do Mark this past year was like such a fulfillment of so many, like checking off so many boxes for me. The role that I would kill to play now before I get too old, I'd really like to, my favorite play of all time is Red by John Logan, the Rothko play. Yeah. And I spent a lot of my time at Villanova researching it. I did my VR and my art, sorry, my Here. VF visual file, right?
Yeah.
And my my full, the dramaturgy file on it.
Wow.
I would love to play Ken in that. and have gone as far as to, like, you know, like getting readings together with friends, basically just so I have an excuse to read it aloud.
No, that's fair.
I would love to play that. And there are a few Sondheim roles that I'd really love to be able to check off. I love all of his shows, you know, but I would love to do, Baker and Into the Woods. I'd love to do, Robert and Company. I did it in high school, but I'm not, I don't count it.
But yeah, Company in high school. I feel like it's like,
right. I want to do it for real. And I like the kingpin role for me is George, which I'm not just saying in the off chance that Valerie Joyce watches this, but Sunday in the Park with George is my favorite musical. And, that role is very special to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, those are all fantastic roles. And also Red, like I would come see you in Red. Like, I hope that you can get something together because that's a fantastic play. And I think you would do a really good job in it. So moving away from the actor in you, but talking about the directing as well, how did you get into directing? Was this something that you picked up in college? Was it earlier? Was it later?
So I went to a high school that had, we did excellent shows. But they also had a class that was called Advanced Studio Theater. And it allowed for whoever was in that class, we produced our own shows.
Wow.
We did it all. You know, we had the guidance of our high school director, and he would help us to order the shows and, you know, give us the stage space to do it. But the rest of it was up to us. We had to nominate within the class a music director, a choreographer, all that kind of stuff. And my first semester doing it, it just so happened that we were stuck on a play. And this tells you a lot about me in high school. I had, on a whim the summer before, I had adapted Love Actually for the stage because it was my favorite movie at the time. And so I said, hey, we can't find a play to do. I've got one right here and I'll direct it. And I had never directed before other than like bossing my siblings around while we, you know, play games. But so I was kind of de facto playwright and director and acting in it because we didn't have enough guys. So there were three other guys in the class. So, you know, so I kind of did it all. I don't think I did it very well. I'd probably cringe if I went back and watched video from it. But because of that class, I directed that. And I also ended up directing You're in Town the next year. But I mean, that was more like, you know, it's a theater class. We're all doing something else. So I might as well direct because I can't choreograph and I can't, you know, at that point I didn't think of myself as a director. And I went to Temple and for a few years I was trying to shoehorn myself into, okay, you're here to be an actor, be an actor.
Right.
And it wasn't until my senior year, I was looking for electives and I was like, I'll take directing. Why not? And so I think I took two directing classes there and a few creative writing courses and stuff like that. But, and then at Villanova too, I ended up taking the directing course that was offered. And, you know, through the scene work there and all the stuff that, you know, had to read books by, Peter Brook and, you know, all of the various textbooks they assigned, I was like, you know what? I remember liking this. Intermittently throughout all of this, I'm working at Upper Darby Summer Stage. I had acted there all the way till I graduated their children's theater program, but then I didn't want to leave. Right. And so I came back to work on staff. And again, to work there, I had to either be a choreographer or a music director, or a stage manager, or a director. And I had no credentials, so I couldn't direct. So I ended up, I was an ASM for a very long time because I had no other skills.
Right.
and so it was near the end of my time at Villanova. And I was like, I think I want to give it another go. I really think I could direct again. And so I was given the opportunity at Summer Stage to direct a very small black box production of The Fantastics. And I loved it. And I ended up at the end of that process feeling that summer, probably more pride over that than anything I had acted in recently. Mm. And it was the journey that you take on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
You know, collaborating with the cast and, you know, like just enabling others to excel. I loved it so much. I was like, I think I want to do it again and again and again and again. And so then, yeah, I graduated from Villanova and I started also actively seeking directing gigs.
Yeah, no, that's really awesome. And I think that definitely speaks to then you becoming an educator as well, which we'll talk mm-hmm. about more of. We do have a clip from something that you directed. I believe this is fairly recently, Wind in the Willows. Let me pull it up.
This is almost exactly a year ago. I directed this in July of last year.
Oh, that's so special.
I shall throw a garden party, as splendid as money can make, for all of my friends.
Oh, Toad, has this experience not changed you at all? I fear not.
Come on, Ratty. It's nearly spring. Time for everyone to turn over a new leaf, a fresh start.
Sometimes I ask a lot. Sometimes I lose the thought. You know, no matter what, a friend is still a friend.
And if the skies cave in, we'll take it on the chin. Be there through thick and thin, a friend is still a friend.
And if we have a difference, we don't give up the ghost. What we have in common is the part which matters most. And at our journey's end, I hope all risks can end. On love you can depend, a friend is still a friend.
That looks like such a fun show, and it looks like they're all having such a blast doing it.
Yeah, we all did. We all did.
And obviously we, I like got lost in my notes for just a second. And I truly forgot what I was about to say. So you've done a lot of directing for younger actors. Have you mm-hmm. also directed for adults as well?
I have not often.
Yeah.
The production of Fantastics I ended up directing. That was more peers. Mm-hmm. But since then, because it had started in the children's theater program at Summer Stage and has now expanded to other high schools, I have not sought to direct beyond high school because for me, I still don't feel like I have quite enough like distance. I don't feel like I have the authority to be directing people who are college age and above. I feel like they're going to know more than me.
Right.
So I have been very, very happy to direct high schoolers, and I get such thrill out of it. But as of this moment, I'm not actively seeking to go, I don't know, all ages.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. And while you may not have like necessarily directed peers like as much, but for you, what's like the difference in directing like younger adults and high school age kids and younger versus adults? Are there more similarities than we think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, I think that what I enjoy being able to do when I work with high schoolers is I treat them as peers. I treat them as adults. Mm-hmm. And I think the only difference is that so often, and I don't mean to criticize because it's not a universal thing, but so often yeah. I feel like in middle school and high school educational theater, you get a lot of people who are working with either people who aren't really theater artists, who are like the English teacher was thrown in to do this, or, right. you know, I'm a music teacher, but I can also, I guess, do this. Mm-hmm. And they're not, I feel like they're not given the experience that they ought to, which is to be able to contribute themselves to the process. Like, I feel like so often, and, you know, and I had the experience too in high school a bit, it was like, this is your blocking, do it.
Right.
And I truly think that that's the only real difference between high school theater and higher level theater is that it becomes more of a collaboration once you get older.
Yeah.
And so that I try to bring that to high school theater because I you know, other than that, it's just time. It's just, you know, like when you're working with older people, they've lived a few more years on Earth and they've had a few more shows under their belts. But the raw talent is there in high school. And sometimes it's just a matter of saying like, no, you can do this, and mm-hmm. letting them feel that they can do it. And then it's amazing what they put out, you know?
Absolutely. Well, even like for me, stepping into high school level and having kind of that experience of like, yeah, you're an adult, you can do this. And right. our first two shows when I was in high school were Carousel and Sound of Music. And so to like being like the Baroness in Sound of Music and sitting down and being like, okay, let's talk about the script and let's talk about what's happening historically in this show. Mm-hmm. That opened up a whole new world to me of like, oh, like, it's not just like standing somewhere and singing and doing something, but I'm actually like learning something about the characters, playing them, and so much more. And so I 100% agree with you in that it's so nice to be able to have a teacher or director in a high school age that is like, yeah, no, you can do this. It's not just me telling you what to do. We are collectively working on it together.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing that currently at some schools. So I have a clip from a trailer you put together for Anastasia, which you did fairly recently, I believe.
Very recently, April.
Oh, wow. So yes, very recently. So I'm going to pull that up right now and we'll go ahead and watch it.
This part of the episode was flagged for copyright purposes, so I unfortunately had to edit this trailer out, but luckily it does not interfere with our discussion over the production.
That one is also such a fun clip. And I mean, I'm going to say that about all these clips because you shared wonderful clips with us. But you can just tell how much fun they're having in those series of clips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That show, that was at Mary and Mercy, which is an all girls or, you know, assigned female at birth school. And we announced the show and there was such excitement. Our Anya later told me, you know, like I grew up watching this film. Mm-hmm. There was this sort of this adoration of the material. And it really showed. It was a great ensemble and they embraced it wholeheartedly. And I did cast female identifying people in male roles, and they loved it. And our Dimitri said, "Can I have a wig, please?" And I was like, "I we don't have to hide your hair." And she was like, "I want to hide my hair." And I was like, "Okay." Like they had, you know, they had opinions, and they voiced them, and I loved it.
Oh, that's so awesome! I love that. And you can tell they just fully embraced those too, and that makes it just so much more fun. And so getting into the theater educator side of you and that hat that you wear, you were saying earlier and talking about like getting into teaching, like from an early age, you were saying your mom was like, you should teach as well. Mm-hmm. But was there a moment that you're like, oh, but like I can teach and like do theater and teach? Like, how did you get into becoming a theater educator, I guess is what I'm trying to ask.
Well, so it was adjacent to, I was directing at the time and I was offered a gig, really kind of through the woodworks, through someone who I knew from high school, who was the head of a Montessori.
Mm-hmm.
And there, they did, like an upper elementary show, cause the Montessori it's grouped together. So upper elementary is all fourth through sixth graders in a classroom together. They wanted to do an upper elementary show. Would you be interested in directing it? And so I ended up entering in there as their director, but also I was coming into the class and teaching them theater games and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, really enjoying doing that too. So suddenly I was the theater teacher, not just the director.
Right.
I think it was just, so it was around that time that I started adding like teacher or educator to the role, because it really is, at least to me, it should be a holistic process.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, like it was like dominoes, because I was there and I was doing their shows, the shutdown happened.
Right.
And then when the school opened back up again, they were just looking for people to be like subs and like, you know, to come into the school and to help to manage the kids, because teachers had flocked away. Teachers had left the business. So I ended up going in there as now not just the theater teacher, but also as just like Chris, the teacher who's hanging around the school. And this past year I got hired on full time at this Montessori as a teacher, which was like, you know, but applying for it, I was hit with a lot of skepticism in interviews because they were like, well, you have not been formally trained as a teacher.
Right.
And so then I started having to like essay about how like, well, no, but as a theater educator, I have taught a whole lot. And here are all the ways that it's very similar to being just a regular classroom teacher. So now I'm there as a teacher and I'm talking to my co-teacher about working theater into the curriculum for next year. So again, it's just so cool to be able to sort of like wear like three different hats while I'm at that school.
Yeah.
And to say I'm also now a theater educator.
Right. And I was super excited reading that you are a Montessori teacher because I was in a Montessori school from like first through third grade. And I loved that experience. And it was such a unique experience. It's a very different kind of classroom. So if you don't know what Montessori school is, I think people should like learn about it. Cause I know it was very helpful for me as a kid being like, I'm interested in this thing. Let me keep pursuing that.
Right.
And yeah, I can imagine that was such an awesome experience for you to get to work in that get to work in those kinds of classrooms as well. And you were saying what age group did you say you were teaching again?
So I'm with fourth through sixth graders.
Nice. That's really awesome. And you work with that age group a fair amount then in directing as well.
Well, so then this summer, this very summer as we speak, I'm still working with the high school age students at Summer Stage.
Yeah.
But about 2 weeks before Summer Stage started, I got a call and they said, hey, do you mind, could you start the summer working with our Performing Starts program, which is about like fourth through sixth grade. It's right in that bracket.
That's funny.
And up until this year, I probably would have said like, I don't know if I, but I was like, you know what? I just spent a whole year working with this age group. Why not? And so then I was a theater teacher to these kids, teaching them storytelling. And developing a curriculum around that. So it's kind of just being open to whatever gets thrown at you and saying, I think I can impart some knowledge here.
Totally. And so being that you've worked in like different age groups, do you have a favorite age group to teach or are they just different in different ways? I'm always curious, like when talking to teachers.
They're different in different ways. My first year at the Montessori, I was not even locked into fourth through sixth grade.
Right.
I was a long-term sub, so I was bouncing around, and I got to experience working with literally infants. So I also like got some like baby classes in there, all the way through sixth grade. But I got to work with the primary care, which is essentially like kindergarten and pre-K through kindergarten, and then the lower elementary classes and also upper elementary. So. And when I was interviewing again for the permanent position that I have now, they were saying, like, is there any which way you're leaning? What do you enjoy? And I, like, my honest answer was kind of everything. Like, everything's got its ups and downs.
Right.
And that goes all the way up. I would say that I still most enjoy working with high schoolers.
Yeah.
I ever, like, baby my students at any age group, but with high schoolers, you're working with people who are, they're full functioning adults.
Yeah,
They can speak on a certain level that you can expect so much of them and they will always meet you at that level.
Right. No, that absolutely makes sense. And I feel like that's a similar experience that from what I've heard from other teachers who like work in primary education as well. And so what's it like to be an educator while actively doing shows as an actor and director and trying to balance all of it?
Tiring.
Yes.
And I figured it out. And the thing is, honestly, which kind of goes back to what I was saying about doing Big Fish. When I have the full days, it's actually fine. The full days and the full weeks, like I get into a rhythm.
Yeah.
And I'm actually like, I, think that I end up doing better ultimately in the days where I'm waking up at 5:30 a.m. to go and teach till, you know, whenever, and then go and direct, and then maybe go act as well at night. When I'm not stopping, I'm actually like, I'm just, it's the adrenaline or whatever. It's like, it's all good stuff. It's all stuff I enjoy doing, you know? Right. So I'm never hitting this slump of like, ugh, here's another day of work. Cause it's always exciting and it's always new. You know, actually it's when I only have to do one or two of the three skill sets that I'm, you know, I get the little pockets of time to be like, oh, I'm doing so much. And, you know,
you don't get the chance
to play a little bit.
No, that absolutely makes sense. Cause then once you have those pockets of like, wow, I'm going very fast. But if you don't have time to think about it, then like, it's fine.
Right. But it can be very chaotic. This past fall, I was at the Montessori all day, and I was directing at Upper Darby and Mary Mercy simultaneously to direct or to open two shows back to back. That we were doing Clue at Upper Darby, and then the very next weekend Puffs at Mary Mercy, and then I was doing Rent in the evening. And I was okay, but I think that all of my teams were a little like, I think Chris is doing too much, because I was coming a little late to Rent sometimes. Mm. And, you know, and like I had a performance of Rent for tech week of Clue.
Oh,
so
wow.
I had to leave my assistant director in charge of tech for like 4 hours, and she did it. Yeah. And she was never like, you know, like, Chris, how dare you? But I also, I was like, there's gotta be, I probably left and like, ugh, Chris is doing too much.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. Trying to like balance it all is a lot, especially when there are those just coinciding times. It's like, well, I have to be at one, and that's just how it's going to be. But I can imagine that also for your students, it must be so wonderful to have a teacher who is actively doing performing and things like that for himself as well as teaching, because that you just like that active live experience of like, oh, they're currently pursuing those things.
Right.
And you have a whole bunch of recent, current and upcoming projects. Mm-hmm. So recently you just held another reading of your play, The Spellbinders, which we didn't really get a chance to talk a whole lot about playwriting, but first tell us about Spellbinders.
It was written on a whim, as are most of my things that I write. I also got to take playwriting with Michael Hollinger. Mm-hmm. And it was in his class that I ended up writing my first full-length play, which was a play about Van Gogh. And I've written a few since, especially during the shutdown. I actually, the creativity started flowing towards, like, what can we do with whatever this is? It's not quite theater. It's not quite film, you know, virtual. What can we do to suit the art form? So I started writing a ton of Zoom plays that were meant to take place on Zoom, because, you know, to me, that was so cool to try to think outside of the box and figure out, like, how do we make this an experience that's fun to do? That's not like, let's try to make arsenic and old lace work as a Zoom reading, you know? And then last summer, I was thinking about the shows that I really wanted to work on for the fall, directing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, I'd really love to direct And Then There Were None. I love that, just like everything about that story, whatever medium it is, there is the play version. But I was like, you know what? It's a small cast for a high school, and also it's based off of a story that began as 10 little N-words.
Yeah.
So like, just knowing that that's part of the history made me uncomfortable to try to expose high schoolers to that.
Understandable.
And, you know, so I wanted to write something that was of that ilk, something that was like an ensemble play where everybody has a very distinct character and it's like an active part of the story. And there's a lot of death. but at the same time, I had this like yearning to write something involving magic. I love fantasy. All of my favorite everythings are, you know, it's all Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones and I had never written a magic piece. So I was like, what if I mash those two together? And the idea was that it's a group of spellbinders who are locked into a place together, and they're deprived of their magic. Mm. And so suddenly they are told that they have to escape or they will all die, but they don't have their magic. So they have to reckon with, like, well, how do we do that when we've become so accustomed to living with magic? Right. So it's a short-ish play. It's grown longer, with 10 people, and it is actively being workshopped. I've had, I think, 6 readings for it. There's another That's coming. Awesome. Michael has helped me to sort of, like, you know, develop it. I don't know what its life will be, but it's the first play that I've written that I have gone through a ton of drafts of and been like, there's something to this. And every reading, mm-hmm. people have been very responsive to it. So I have no experience with, like, what are the next steps, but
right.
I'm hoping it will become something more.
Yeah. And having Michael Hollinger helping you out, I'm sure will help give you advice to what the next steps will be in general. So that's so exciting. And I'm excited to hear more about it when more comes out about it. currently, you're playing Linus in Snoopy with Hedgerow Theater Company, headed yep. by another Villanova alum, which you told me, Marcy Bermucci. How's mm-hmm. that been? Are you about to close soonish?
Yeah. I'm off to a matinee after we finish speaking.
Yeah.
We got extended, so we were supposed to close.
Awesome.
We were supposed to close tomorrow. We get one more weekend now, which is wonderful. Awesome.
Amazing.
And we've been going since mid-June? I don't remember when we started, but yeah. it was a short process. It's a professional, you know, rehearse all day, every day for a while, and then you open it.
Yeah.
But it's been a ton of fun. I love small ensemble shows. I love mm-hmm. getting to know just like a small group. Really well together. We hit that first week and it was all choreo all day, every day. So fire. we figured it out together, and they're a really lovely group.
That sounds like so much fun. So people should definitely go check that out since you got extended and you have like one more week. So go see it. And then coming up, you have several things. You're mm-hmm. currently directing Disney's Descendants at Upper Darby Summer Stage. Yep. Where are you in the rehearsal process currently?
We just finished our first full week of rehearsals. We cast it the week before, and we got a little bit of work done. But this is our first, like, we're here from 9 to 4:30 every day rehearsing.
Nice.
Week. We had a bit of a speed bump. We had a strain of COVID pass through the cast. Oof. So there are some people who haven't been here all week, so they're in for a lot of catch up on Monday.
Yeah.
It's the whole show, essentially.
Yeah.
In 1 week, but we are going into we have a staff preview on Wednesday.
That's coming up soon.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
And then we open the following Tuesday. So
that's crazy. Yeah.
I didn't know a thing about Descendants before.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know anything about it, and I want to go research it more because I feel like it's becoming more and more popular with theater. So
the high schoolers love it.
Yeah.
Love it. They're teaching me about it because they're like, well, in the lore of Descendants. And I'm like,
and you're like, oh, there's
please.
Lore? Oh, please yeah. do tell me. That's awesome. I love that. And then you're currently in rehearsals for Something Rotten at the Players Club of Swarthmore. Mm-hmm. That is such a fun show. Who are you playing?
I'm playing Nick Bottom.
Yay. I was hoping you would say that. it's a great role for you and such a fun show. Where are you in the process for that? When does it open?
Thankfully, we're still in early days for that. So we're Good. Rehearsing like 3 times a week. We open in September.
Nice.
And run through the end of that month. So, you know, right as Snoopy ends and Descendants ends, I'll be rolling into sort of the deeper end of that rehearsal process.
That's awesome. It sounds like everything is spacing out well enough that you're like, okay, I don't have to do 3 shows at one time.
Right.
But then amongst all of this, you're gearing up for the fall shows at Upper Darby and yeah. Marion Mercy Academy.
Yeah.
What are you most excited for those two this upcoming year?
All of it.
All of it.
I'm so excited for the fall. We have a great lineup. We are doing Mary Mercy is doing Peter and the Starcatcher, which has mm-hmm. been on my bucket list for years to be in or to direct. So I'm just yeah. to work on it. I'm so excited. And right before going into Descendants, I spent like 3 weeks cutting away at Hamlet because we're doing Hamlet at Upper Darby. So I have
nice.
my very own cut.
And, That's awesome.
we're in early talks with Pulitzer Prize winning James Imes
Ooh. To
come in and to talk to them about Fat Hand.
That would be lovely. Oh my gosh. Have you had the opportunity to see it either be at with Wilma or here in New York?
So I haven't had a chance to see the public production, but I did get to watch. I got to the watch Wilma. The films, whatever you call it, of the original. And I had a very good friend in that. So, I think it's a phenomenal piece, and
it really is
really cool to get to work on something sort of on the other end of that, and to be like, here's James's exploration of this piece as well. Yeah. Let's work on the original, the original piece.
Right. And that's going to be so exciting. And hopefully that'll all work out so that your students can get to chat with him and get to learn all the amazing things James has to offer and to say and all that good stuff. So it's crazy. We're already coming to the end here. Where can people find you on social media or get in contact with you and that kind of stuff?
I'm available on Facebook. Look at my name, Chris Monaco. It's right there. I'm on Instagram. I'm Gingerbeard 1992.
Nice.
you don't see it right now. I'm clean shaven, but I do have a famously red beard. I do not do the TikTok.
That's okay.
Technically have an account if you wanted to find it, but there's nothing there. I don't. That's where the grades are showing. I just don't understand it. So.
No, that's okay. I don't even have the app on my phone. Okay. So I'm along the same lines. So you can find me on Instagram and Twitter, although I really don't use Twitter, at Laura_Marjoram, and my website, www.lauramarjoram.com. You can find this show that you're watching, listening to right now on Instagram at Overtures Show, on YouTube. Search Overtures Show, give it a follow, watch, comment, all that good stuff. And I am uploading all of the backlog onto Spotify and Apple Music. So go find those, listen to the upcoming episodes. I'm starting to get now into episode 20. So there is enough backlog to listen to play catch up on a little bit. So yeah. And then links for both of those, for both the Spotify and Apple Music page, are on the Instagram in the highlights. So yeah, easy to find, all that good stuff. Chris, do you have any final thoughts for viewers live and in the future?
Do theater, make art, do it well.
Yes, absolutely. And with that, I hope everyone has a wonderful day, and we'll see you later. Bye.